Public schools need more money. After the mess that was COVID, the billion, yes, with a B, billion-dollar grant program to further support COVID recovery efforts in schools. And Harvard applications drop after plenty of turmoil at the Ivy League university. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Educate. I'm Liz Collin. Also ahead on the show here this week, the job posting for a school administrator who can examine the presence of whiteness. For real. It went viral, probably not for the right reasons. Our constitutional law scholar from the John Birch Society, Joe Wolverton, joins us this week to talk about all of this and more. Good day, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We're going to get to those stories and more here in a moment. But first, we want to welcome you in to Educate. We're here each and every week to take a deep dive into education. We're also showing you ways to get involved, to show up, to stand up, and to speak up on behalf of our kids. The central issues of education, providing criticism, and we're also providing positive solutions to problems. My name is Liz Collin. I'll be your host here for the next hour. I'm a Minnesota-based journalist with a place called Alpha News. Check us out, alphanews.org. I'm a wife, a mom, and happy to be with you each and every week as we navigate this world of education together. We are here to help. With that, there is this. Minnesota School District affirms students' right to walk out of LGBT lesson. This story comes to us from the Epoch Times to get things going this week on Educate. Liberty Council became involved at the request of local parents and teachers who were concerned about the upcoming activity, describing it as, quote, one-sided LGBT political indoctrination. This Epoch Times story goes on to say a 40-page demand letter from Liberty Council, it's a national Christian advocacy organization, persuaded the Minnesota school system to acknowledge the rights of teachers, parents, and high school students to opt out of a lesson celebrating and honoring the LGBT lifestyle. So the lesson called LGBTQIA plus History and Culture is scheduled to be taught to high schoolers during the first week of April in this school district in Minnesota. So Liberty Council becomes involved at the request of local parents and teachers who were concerned about the upcoming activity, describing it as indoctrination. So a group of teachers said they objected to teaching the lesson on religious grounds and they feared retaliation for refusing to do so. So Liberty Council analysts reviewed the lesson. They found that it proclaims to students multiple controversial political positions and opinions as truth. They said that some of the lesson's questions violates the teen's privacy, instill confusion, unconstitutionality. They serve as a call to political action. All of this is taking place, they say, in this lesson. So attorneys write this demand letter, and this demand letter is posted on the Epoch Times if you want to look for yourself about this Liberty Council getting involved within the school district in Minnesota. A device used by lawyers to achieve their purpose without litigation by sending this demand letter so it doesn't end up having to be in court. So government is not permitted to establish a government orthodoxy on matters of sexuality and identity, according to attorneys for Liberty Council. So the district goes ahead to respond to this demand letter, the Osseo Area Schools. Just to set the scene a bit, this is the fifth largest school district in Minnesota, and this all taking place at the end of March. And this their reaction says, quote, the students themselves may choose to leave prior to or during the lesson. An alternative class centering on college and career readiness will be available for them to attend instead. So I, in many ways, you applaud these parents, these students for taking it this far, for pushing back. And you also have the district that I will applaud to say, hey, you know what? It is up to you whether you want to do this or not. But one also has to question what kind of rift this creates among the students themselves. The question then being, why is this being taught at all? What kind of message does that send when you see your classmates walking out? What kind of message does it send when you see these other classmates opting in? It just seems an absolute ridiculous position that this school district is putting our kids in and also putting these teachers in as well. So you're creating these lines basically that are drawn in the sand that do not seem to be healthy For anyone. The district stated that the request by Liberty Council for accommodation for teachers who declined to teach the material based on sincerely held religious beliefs has been approved, and it will be provided. The story goes on to say, according to the announcement, parents and caregivers will continue to be allowed to sign up for an appointment to physically visit the school to review these LGBT learning materials, and if they so desire, opt their children out of class. And they simply can do that by filling out a form. In their demand letter, Liberty Council attorneys took issue with the physical visit requirement in the digital age. They questioned, hey, you know, why can't the district just go ahead and email this to parents? So they pushed back on that as well. So what is this lesson all about? That is the question here. Again, the story coming from the Epoch Times, explaining that parents are able to opt their children out of this LGBTQ curriculum in the Osseo School District. Students can opt out, teachers can opt out. So according to this bulletin, this dates back to March 8th, the purpose of the main 40-minute lesson is to help students, quote, gain a deeper understanding of LGBTQIA plus histories and identities. That's the point, it says. The lesson is designed to instill in students an appreciation for the importance of using correct pronouns and respecting diverse identities. After the class, students will help create a brave space. We're now no longer doing safe spaces. We're making brave spaces. So a brave space that is respectful of all members of our community, this bulletin went on to say. A brave space is different from a safe space in that it is designed to manage conflict among equals rather than avoid it. So an emphasis on mutual respect, I guess, in a brave space. This almost sounds made up at this point. But this... all of this drama sort of dates back to the summer of 2022. That's when the Osseo Area School Board of Education laid the foundation for this lesson by resolving to acknowledge the value of the lives of our trans, lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, intersex, two-spirit, asexual, non-binary, and gender-expansive scholars and staff. Whew. So they did that in this formal acknowledgement back in 2022. 2.7%, if you're wondering, of the school district's 20,000 students fall into at least one of the 10 categories mentioned above. So that's 2.7% that we're going ahead and giving this lesson to, and now creating all these rifts when people can opt out and whatnot. So just take it out altogether. It seems like that will be the next step here, but we'll have to continue to monitor that situation in the Osseo School District, again, the fifth largest school district in Minnesota. The resolution recognizes the need to observe Pride Month and to value the students' gender identity and gender expression in an inclusive learning environment in which all the students feel safe and supported. Always be sure to sign up for Alpha News, alphanews.org. We'll go ahead and take your email and send you our top five stories each and every day at alphanews.org. It is free. Everything is free. We also have an app. If you'd like to stay tuned to all of these stories, which also are written about quite a bit on The New American as well. We just have more of a Minnesota focus over on Alpha News. But still ahead here this week, much more to come. We have our guest, Joe Wolverton from the John Birch Society, joining us this week. He's going to weigh in on several stories, including Harvard applications seeing a dip. They don't plunge, however, as is pointed out in this CNN story we're going to digest here in a minute, but talking about their historic turmoil and what has transpired when it comes to the number of applications ever since. So that is still to come. And also, if you'd like to examine whiteness, we have the perfect job for you. This is an actual job in one school district. Again, here in Minnesota, this job posting is really going to get your attention. And I want to get Joe Wolverton's take on all of this, an assistant superintendent position. You can make is more than $200,000 a year. Should you be this completely crazy, I'll say, to actually apply for this job. It really is a wild one. So stay tuned for that.
Can you believe after all the recent violent protests, looting, and destruction, some communities are considering either defunding or abolishing the police? If you agree that now is the time when police protection is needed most, then it's time we stand up and support your local police and the communities they serve. Call 800-JBS-USA1 and request your free Support Your Local Police info packet. That's 800-JBS-USA1 and request your free Support Your Local Police info packet today.
Welcome back to Educate. Happy spring, everyone. Liz Collin here. Still to come on the show today, a very viral job posting, I think for the wrong reasons, but a school district looking for an administrator who can examine the presence of whiteness. This is for real. And a public schools spending billions of dollars to now fix the learning loss that COVID cost them. So we'll have those stories coming up. But first, I want to welcome Joe Wolverton to the show, our constitutional law scholar with the John Birch Society. Joe, it's good to talk to you again. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Liz. I love being with you. I'm very grateful for your invitation.
You're my favorite guest. Don't tell anybody else, I think I tell you that every week. So it's fine.
I wanted to run podcast.
That's great. I may or may not be sending you a check in the mail. I thought I'd run this story past you to start with under the category of who could have seen that coming. But this article from CNN about Harvard applications dip, but they don't plunge following historic turmoil. So reading a bit from the story, undergraduate applications to Harvard University dipped to four-year lows for the class of 2028. That's according to new figures that offer early clues, this says, into how the Ivy League school's reputation has held up during a period of historic turmoil. The applications figures are also the first look at Ivy League school admissions after the Supreme Court gutted affirmative action this past summer. Although the data does not include demographic breakdowns, Harvard said that it received 54,000 applications, just a little over 54,000 for the class of 2028, and that's down 5% from the year before. So we'll go ahead and bring you in here, Joe. What are your thoughts on these numbers, a 5% dip in applications this year at Harvard?
Well, I mean, there was something to be expected from the fact that they had, you know, the turmoil, as they call it in the article, from the president of Harvard getting caught plagiarizing, and then the anti-Semitic activity, associated with the Israel-Hamas war. So I think there was some expectation of a dip, but frankly, the cachet of saying that you attended Harvard University, despite the fact that it does not deserve that reputation anymore, you still have that reputation of being the nation's top university. So those things like plagiarism and anti-Semitism probably aren't going to be enough to put off someone who's willing to do anything, pay upwards of, you know, $500,000 for a consultant to get accepted to Harvard. So I would expect there to be a dip, because there will be those few people who think to themselves, I don't want to be associated with a university where these sorts of things are accepted. But again, the cachet of being a Harvard grad is enough to, as you know, to cover a multitude of sins, so to speak.
I want folks to listen in here now to a PBS report recapping this a bit from December, just to refresh some memories about all of the turmoil that Harvard has faced these last few months. Then we'll get back to my conversation with Joe Wolverton from the John Birch Society. So take a listen to this.
At Harvard University, turmoil over the fate of the school's president, Claudine Gay. Gay, MIT President Sally Kornbluth, and now outgoing University of Pennsylvania President Liz McGill came under fire last week for their testimony in a House hearing on rising anti-Semitism on their campuses. On Friday, Gay apologized for her remarks to the Harvard Crimson, saying, "Calls for violence or genocide against the Jewish community or any religious or ethnic group are vile. They have no place at Harvard, and those who threaten our Jewish students will be held to account." The flashpoint of last Tuesday's hearing, a heated line of questioning from Republican Representative Elise Stefanik, who herself has been criticized for not calling out anti-Semitism in her own party.
And Dr. Gay, at Harvard, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Harvard's rules of bullying and harassment, yes or no?
It can be, depending on the context.
Stefanik was referring to slogans that have been chanted at pro-Palestinian rallies on campus, such as "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." That phrase, adopted by Hamas, is seen by some as a call for the destruction of Israel and the killing of Jewish people.
So again, that's a PBS report recapping a bit some of the turmoil at Harvard these last few months. Interestingly enough, Joe Wolverton, again, is my guest this week on the show, the constitutional law scholar with the John Birch Society. PBS puts this out, and they're blaming Republicans, obviously, for the turmoil at Harvard. And also, interestingly enough, YouTube shuts the comments off for this story. But again, you know, you're talking, Joe, about that even all of this drama isn't enough. People are still willing, these parents are, you know, still willing to pay six figures for this degree at the end of the day.
Right. Well, the article even mentions the fact that a Harvard degree still earns you statistically about 60% more over your lifetime of employment than going to any other college. So there's still that economic benefit that if your goal in life is to have a higher salary, nothing that the president does or any of the students or any of the professors do is going to stand in the way of that pursuit, except for those few people that I think are represented by the reduction, the 5% reduction. I think those people that's represented in that is that, yeah, that's enough for that many people to say, I don't want to be associated with that kind of atmosphere, particularly when it's anti-academic. It's so obviously political and progressive. And that's why you have YouTube comments turned off, is because anybody can comment on YouTube. And so that prevents Harvard from narrowly tailoring the narrative to make it look as if it's the fault of Republicans, which is just a code word for old white man blocking, you know, keeping these people down. And when in reality, people on YouTube would say, well, what about the fact that your president plagiarizes the entirety of her career? What about the fact that you have this atmosphere, this anti-Semitic atmosphere, which seems to be growing at your university? And they can't control that. So shut down the comments on YouTube and deflect by blaming it on a politician that had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And with the last minute remaining, you know, we spoke a little bit about this at the top of the segment with the landmark decision by the Supreme Court that, you know, overturning affirmative action in college admissions in that process. And that sounds like something, Joe, that you believe perhaps will play a bigger part in years to come. And we won't see, you know, that trickle down quite yet.
Right. I think it was issued too late to really affect this year. So I think next year, if we can get the truth out of them, you will see a decrease in enrollment as a result of that ruling, because it will have to be reduced because so many people that could have hoped for admission before the ruling will now not have a hope of admission in post-ruling, because it will prevent Harvard from using race as a qualifier for admission.
Well, don't worry, Joe. We are still holding on to race in job applications in Minnesota. So we're going to transition into that story coming up. Again, my guest this week, Joe Wolverton from the John Birch Society. A reminder that this show is brought to you by The New American. You're listening to Educate, and we'll be right back. The New American Magazine powers the Educate show, featuring in-depth articles and news analysis, culture, and politics. The New American can arrive on your doorstep bi-weekly in a beautifully published physical copy or digitally on their new mobile app. Bring yourself up to speed with intelligent coverage from a constitutional perspective. Now, for a limited time, visit thenewamerican.com/educate25 and receive 25% off. Subscribe today at thenewamerican.com/educate25.
Have you ever heard someone say, the system's broken? Sure you have. Well, it's not true. America's founders created a brilliant governing system that prevents us from having kings, queens, dictators, and even czars. We the people can replace every elected official in a span of 6 years if we so choose. Here at the John Birch Society, we believe the only way to liberty, prosperity, and national sovereignty is not only understand what's in our founding documents, but demand that every elected official adheres to them. The reason we have a ballooning, reckless, and corrupt government is because elected officials aren't following the Constitution. The John Birch Society is principled, coordinated, effective activism. We believe the Constitution is the solution. Join JBS and change America. Visit JBS.org or call 1-800-JBS-USA1 to get involved. That's JBS.org.
Welcome back to Educate. Again, Liz Collin here and joined by Joel Wolverton, our constitutional law scholar with the John Birch Society. Always has great insight. An educator himself, he's been there. He kind of knows the deal. This story, I know I always say this when I read stories, I think of you, and I don't want you to think that's a weird thing.
When you see the word whiteness, you think of me. I think that's what happens.
Yeah, but this definitely, I was thinking of you, and sometimes I save these stories until you'll join me again on Educate. But this is a job description. The St. Louis Park Public Schools, and just to set the scene, St. Louis Park is a suburb of Minneapolis here in Minnesota, where I work over at Alpha News. But this is a story here that we wrote recently for Alpha News, that the school district is seeking an assistant superintendent who can, quote, examine the presence and role of whiteness in systems and structures. So this was posted recently to the job board. In case you're wondering, you can receive an annual salary between $134,000 and about $200,000 as assistant superintendent. This job description, though, I mean, it's pretty wild, Joe. I know I sent the story your way. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, well, I just went through and noticed all the woke buzzwords and decided for the benefit of your listeners to translate those into English. So when they say anti-racist, they mean anti-white. Systems of oppression means Western culture. Culturally relevant pedagogy means instilling white guilt in all their students. And racial equity means finding some way to demean anything accomplished by a white person in history. And the thing is, Liz, okay, this is a person who is being paid around $150,000 of money stolen, well, since you live in Minnesota, stolen from you. Mm-hmm. So I think they should have to define what these things are. Like, what is racial equity? Like, how many races? I want a list of the races, right? And I want a list of all the errors in the world that they're going to be covering and that they're going to be preventing their students from learning about. Or if they do present them to them, I want to know which race they're assigning responsibility to, right? So I want to know if it's slavery, who's responsible? If it's climate change, I want the races listed and I want the percentage of responsibility, the percent of culpability assigned to each race so that, we, whose money was stolen by the government to pay for this nonsense, can at least get some kind of return on that. We can at least know what exactly he's doing. Besides, like, the word they use is, I can't remember exactly, I don't have it in front of me, but it was, they're going to monitor. How is it they said it, Liz, in the article?
Something about you're going whiteness. To examine. Obviously, Joe, you're going to be examining the presence of whiteness. I mean, who doesn't just do that on a daily basis?
I do that in the mirror every morning, and I examine that there's a lot of whiteness, But what does that, Liz, what does that mean? Are you more white than I am? Or what does white mean? White wasn't even something that was associated with race until the 18th century. Before that, your race was defined by your language, by your religion, and by your geography. Had nothing to do with the color of your skin, because something that you might call white, there's so many shades, and something you might call black, there's so many shades. And at what percentage are you? Because this matters. Because if we're talking about, we've got to prevent whiteness from pervading our classrooms, then don't we need to know the racial, so to speak, background of the people being talked about in school. So we want to make sure, at what percentage are they too white to be woke, right? At what percentage? Is it, if I'm 30% European, am I too white? At what percentage does the whiteness disqualifier kick in? That's what I want to know. But it's never mentioned, right? It's never defined because it's in, Liz, it's undefinable. You cannot define, because how are they going to be the percentage on that? Because next thing you know, you're going to have to, you're going to see that someone that you're promoting as black is actually not black in the way that it's defined today. And so you're going to have to reconfigure and rewrite your entire curriculum because that guy that you thought was black just failed the whiteness test. Right? How are they talk about in the ad this racial blind spot. I mean, their racial blind spot is ignoring the contributions made by white people. Right? I mean, that's just the simple fact of it. And their racial blind spot is ignoring the fact that these racial designations are completely fabricated for the purpose of dividing us and forcing us into conflict that otherwise wouldn't exist.
Yeah, and I don't see one single positive comment when it comes to this story. Again, my conversation this week with constitutional law scholar from the John Birch Society. We have Joe Wolverton on. I was going to read a bit more. So we had the reporter from Alpha News counted anti-racist, racial equity, other related phrases in the job description used more than a dozen times in total. And earlier this month, the story points out that the St. Louis Park Public Schools, they hired a new superintendent, this Dr. Carla Hines. And in a statement announcing her hiring, the chair of the St. Louis Park School Board said that Hines' educational leadership, dedication to student academic success, and vision for racial equity transformation, okay, it's impressive, and I'm confident she's going to lead our district with integrity and passion. But that's, I agree with you with just the language that they've been able to control here. I don't even know what a lot of this even means, but I also think it's quite telling. Toward the end of the story, 4,500 students are enrolled within the St. Louis Park School District. 53% in the district are white, 20% are black, 12% are Latino. And here we go. 34% of the high school students are proficient in math. 58% are proficient in reading. So that's at the very end of the story. Perhaps we're burying the lead here, but I'm glad that the focus really seems to be on what it is when students who, when they graduate, cannot read or do math by the looks of the real statistics we should be paying attention to.
Right. Well, you may not be proficient in math, but are you proficient in identifying our cultural enemies as whiteness? That's all that matters. If you can graduate knowing that Christopher Columbus was a, you know, did nothing more than infect the native generations with smallpox. If you can know that the pilgrims did nothing more than murder the Native Americans. If you can do nothing more than know that everyone in the South in the 19th century owned a black person and whipped them every day, then it doesn't matter if you know that two and two are four. I don't care. The real things that matter is, have you been steeped in the socially woke nonsense, and can you repeat it? And will you bring your kid right back to the indoctrination camp once you've had your kid? The only way any of this ever ends is when parents decide, okay, look, I don't have the $6 billion to give to, you know, to schools that the federal government gets. So the only way I'm going to fight this is to get my kid out of this place, because they just want to make sure that we create a crisis and we offer a false solution. The crisis is the races have always opposed each other, and without even admitting that that classification of race is a bunch of nonsense when it comes to skin color. But nobody would know that, Liz, because we're not taught that. We're taught there's white and black. They've always fought. They always will fight. And blacks have always been subjugated. And the only way to admit that is to pursue this inexplicable, undefinable goal of racial equity. And it does. I mean, I would just like to ask the new whiteness czar, is Barack Obama black or white?
The whiteness czar. You're right. That's exactly how this job description should read. Why don't just call it what it is.
Yeah,
we'll be back with more from Joe Wolverton coming up here on Educate. A reminder, this show is brought to you by The New American. For more, visit thenewamerican.com.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org and join us in restoring this great nation.
Welcome back to Educate. This is Liz Cullen. I always feel like the show just flies by when Joe Wolverton joins me. He is our guest from the John Birch Society. And let's just say Joe knows a lot of stuff. We just finished up a great conversation about, what are we calling this? The whiteness czar in St. Louis Park.
I'm going to apply. I mean, I oppose everything that it stands for, but I'm going to apply. And just use the money to, you know, to undo what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
so I'm going to apply to be the whiteness czar. So I might be moving up to Minnesota.
Well,
soon,
that's great. You have the job over and over again in my book. If I was on that hiring committee, you're hired for sure, Joe. This next story is talking about how public schools wasted COVID funds. I know we're shocked also by this headline, but this story from The Hill: President Biden's signature education initiative has proven to be a costly failure for students, and now the administration is asking for even more money to make up the blunder. So just to set the scene a bit, the Biden administration's federal K-12 budget proposal for 2025, the fiscal year, calls for $8 billion, with a B, an $8 billion grant program to further support public schools' COVID-19 recovery efforts. The temporary academic acceleration and achievement grants, that's what they're called, would be aimed at increasing student attendance, expanding tutoring, because, of course, we need to fix the nightmare that they created for so many students, and adding learning time in public schools. But, Joe, your thoughts on this? Just go from the money tree and, I guess, start picking some more, huh?
Well, as long as we're willing to let them steal from us, they're going to keep stealing from us. If my neighbor left his garage door open and I just started taking his tools and he never said anything to me, I'm going to empty his garage. And if he never comes trying to get them back, I'm going to start stealing everything I can. I'm going to move on to the backyard. So we don't really do anything about the fact that they steal $8 billion from us. And Liz, you talked about me being an educator. I saw this firsthand. I had a student, this blew my mind. Like, literally, honestly, it was one of those times I just was struck dumb with anger. It was like, I had a student complain to me that her parents had to hire a math tutor because she couldn't understand her math teacher. And when she said this to me, students in the area that where we were talking, they came up and said, yeah, my parents have to hire it too, because the school district had hired a math teacher whose accent was so bad, whose English was so poor, she couldn't teach them math in a way that they could understand because she didn't speak English well enough. But she was a woman and a minority, so she got the job. And then they had to hire a tutor. I mean, aren't you supposed to go to school to be taught? So now they're admitting, because part of that educational grant money that Biden is sending out to the schools, part of it is for hiring tutors. We are admitting that our teachers can't teach you. So now we've got to go give you extra money to find people that can actually teach you what you're supposed to be being taught, but you can't be taught it because we're not hiring based on ability. We're hiring simply on race. or we're hiring on some sort of ethnicity or some sort of minority qualifier. We don't care if this person actually, I mean, in this case, Liz, this isn't an exaggeration. This teacher could not speak enough English to teach Americans, so they had to hire a tutor to teach math.
That is absolutely shocking. Again, my conversation.
But they don't care.
This week with Joe Wolverton, exactly, from the John Birch Society Constitutional Law Scholar. You're right. They don't care. And that seems to be, until people care enough to do something about this, that's the real problem. Just a couple more tidbits to highlight from this story on the Hill. So these numbers are remarkable. So Congress doled out $190 billion to states for K through 12 education during the pandemic, $190 billion, $122 billion was part of Biden's American Rescue Plan. That was in March of 2021. For context, that is more than three times the total K through 12 funding for the 2020 school year, and more than $3,800 per student in extra funding. So people want, you know, are wondering where these dollars are going, and it's unbelievable how much money poured in. And even, and let's not forget too, despite the fact that they knew these lockdowns and such were not even working, but they continued to press on and keep our kids home.
Well, right. But also require that your kids attend class, because we don't want your kids going without a day without the indoctrination. Just because we can't be there together because of pseudoscience, that doesn't mean we can't use technology to continue the indoctrination. But Liz, I saw this firsthand again in regard to this money, you know, what's it being used for? Everything that it was supposed to be used for, it wasn't used for. I will, a direct quote from the principal of the school where I taught was, we've got all this federal money now, so submit, each teacher, submit your wish list. What do you want us to use this money for?
Oh my.
They used it to give teacher bonuses. They used it to, they purchased Broadway-worthy theater sets for the drama department. They hired all kinds of new staff, despite the fact that there were now fewer students. Suddenly, we needed more staff. They created classes, right? Oh, we're going to have a Pilates class. We're going to have a calligraphy class. We're going to have a sewing class. Just using this money, and then they built a theater. None of it went to students. None of that money was used to improve education. None of it was used to buy better books or more books for the library. In the school where I taught, we didn't have a library, but we had Broadway-worthy theater sets, right? Because you need ninth graders who can have, you know, Broadway-worthy musical sets. And we had teacher bonuses in the thousands, because guess what was the top of every teacher's wish list? A bonus. Take this money and give it to us. Well, here's the thing, and this is what, you know, made me all my colleagues' favorite person. I mean, if you don't think this job pays enough, then quit and get one that does. You're an adult. You're free. Don't take a job that you think doesn't pay enough. If the money you make doesn't provide the lifestyle you want, then as an adult, you don't cry and whine and ask the government to steal money for you because you're too much of a coward to steal for yourself. You don't weaponize your vote to steal from your neighbor to augment your income so that you can afford that third trip to Disneyland. Quit the job and get one that pays for your lifestyle. But then you might have to work more than 9 months a year. And no, there's no way we're going to do that. I'd rather take the job and constantly complain and rely on the government to steal from my neighbor and then ask for the money, knowing that I'll get it, because we all have made this sort of tacit agreement of mediocrity, Liz. We all look at each other and wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're not going to actually improve education, but we still want the money, so let's pretend it's for education.
Yeah. Wow. Great points. I could see though your colleagues probably you were their favorite person. This guy telling it like it is. That's unheard of, especially it seems like in the world of education. And you know how bad was it? You know how bad was the pandemic for our children? And researchers say that students in grades 3 through 8 lost a half a year in math, 1/3 of a year in reading on average during the pandemic. I feel like those numbers seem really low. To what actually Liz, took place.
I mean, the entire, let's just call it like it is. And another thing that made me, you know, all my fellow teachers favorite, the entire public school system could be replaced by YouTube. That's just a fact. So if you lost a half a year in reading, that's on the parents because YouTube has plenty of stuff to help kids learn to read. So the us losing doesn't make any sense at all because just because we can't be there in person, how many of us learn from, you know, videos that we watch as opposed to going to, you know, adult education night classes at the community college? We just dial up a video and learn how to do it. Well, kids can do that too, right? So if we lost anything, that's on the parents. That's, I mean, the education system is functioning exactly as it was intended to function. As the hiring of the whiteness czar proves, it's going along excellently. It's going along just as it was designed to destroy families and to break people up into groups that will constantly be fighting so that the government can offer us peace.
Yeah, well, I'm busted there. I think even doing this show, I've watched 4 or 5 YouTube videos in order for this to happen. So I think you're absolutely right there. Well, Joe, I want to thank you again, Joe Wolverton from the John Birch Society. Tell us with our last few seconds here how people can find you.
Just jbs.org, thenewamerican.com, and then my podcast, which I just love doing, is Teacher of Liberty on YouTube.
Thanks so much, Joe. Again, this show is brought to you by The New American. For more, visit thenewamerican.com. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening to Educate.